Thank you so much, Mel, for all your beautiful music.
Thank you.
Hello again, everyone. I'm so happy to be here with you all. And thank you so much for welcoming me into your virtual sanctuary. I really appreciate it. I also want to appreciate those of you who have reminded us all this morning that Rainbow Sunday isn't a white thing. Right? So, if there's anyone out there who was sort of just having an assumption or living with an unconscious thing that we've sort of ingrained from our larger culture, that we were going to talk about white people when we were talking about rainbows, I want to invite you to sit with that because that's not what we're here today to do. So I want to tell you a story, and those of you who were at the family service earlier know that I already shared one story this morning. So I want to share another one because I enjoy stories. Hope that's cool. This story is about my parents. I've been a Unitarian Universalist since I was six, when my parents joined the UU Church, where they are still members today. My dad is the son of and grandson of Presbyterian ministers. And my mom was raised a devout atheist in small town Wisconsin. The family joke is that when they became UU, my dad's family said, "Oh no, he's lost religion." And my mom's family said, "Oh no, she's found religion." Which I think is sort of the quintessential UU story right there, right? And I really think of my parents as the quintessential Unitarian Universalists. They came from previous spiritual paths or the lack thereof that didn't fit them. They are white and middle class and in their 60s, and they both have higher degrees. They are artists and teachers. My dad was an environmentalist way before it was cool, y'all, and considers nature his true spiritual home. They listen to NPR and read the New York Times and have season tickets to the Milwaukee Repertory Theater. They own two cars and a house in the suburb. They are politically active and vote Democrat. Sound familiar? I think of my home congregation as the quintessential UU congregation as well. It's full of wonderful, kind people, most of whom are white and middle class and higher educated and politically liberal. Growing up, it was rare to hear words like God and prayer spoken in service. Church members did a volunteer shift at a soup kitchen downtown once a month and always turned out for the neighborhood river cleanup. They are very proud of their rainbow icon on their road sign and the solar panels on their roof, both of which ruffled feathers in the suburb of Milwaukee that the church is in. I'm so grateful that my parents joined my home church. It was a wonderful place to grow up. I gained an open-hearted curiosity about all the different paths and truths that people hold. I was taught to honor my own truth, even or especially when that truth was different than what was expected. I internalized the idea that living our faith meant working to make the world a better place and fighting for those who were oppressed. And as a queer and trans person, I was able to grow up without any sense that these deep truths about myself were at odds with my faith. In fact, I credit being raised UU to a large degree with my ability to be the person that I am today, my full, authentic, queer, gender fluid, flamboyantly feminine and masculine all at one time, neither here nor there, Mary Martin as Peter Pan, bow tie flashing, motorcycle riding, roller derby playing, BOI boy self. But allowing me to exist and not actively making it harder for me to be myself in the world was not enough for me to feel a sense of unconditional welcome and belonging in my church as I grew into adulthood. Nor have I ever felt that way in any of the dozens of UU churches I've been to since. I've never felt like any of them were places where I could fully get my spiritual needs met. Why? I was raised here. This is my religion. You would think that those of us who were raised UU would be the ones who would feel most at home in our congregations, right? The truth is really hard to face. The vast majority of those of us who are raised in a UU church leave. Only 12.5% of the adult UUs in our congregations were raised UU. My parents' church is not my church. Why? Before I answer that question, I want to tell you a little bit more about my parents. I love them so much. They are certainly not perfect, but I've never questioned their love and care for me. And they've given me so much, a great childhood, a college education, and acceptance that has grown into appreciation for who I am as a person, even though I'm not the person they expected when they were raising me. When I was growing up, my parents' world was a reflection of themselves. Their friends were all people like them, for the most part. Teachers, artists, people their age, their race, their class. Our church was a reflection of my parents' world as well. As the quintessential UUs, they fit right in. It was easy for them to feel a sense of total belonging, almost like our church had been made precisely with them in mind. As my sister and I got older, it became clear that our parents expected our lives to look like theirs without being aware of it. They had so many completely unconscious assumptions that we would get master's degrees, own houses, be upwardly mobile, that we would have friends and partners of particular races, classes, abilities, genders. Of course they had these assumptions. They wanted the best for us based on what their own lives and cultural contexts had told them the best is. But my life and my sister's life don't look anything like our parents' lives. Our people are not their people. My sister married a wonderful man from Nicaragua who immigrated to Wisconsin to be with her. Spanish is the primary language spoken in their home. Theirs is a multiracial, multilingual community of friends and a huge, vibrant, extended Nicaraguan family. My community is also a multiracial, multilingual one, a community of queer and trans people of many faiths, many ages, many abilities. Like my brother-in-law, my partner is also working class. He's a generation older than me, and queer and trans and in recovery and a long-term survivor of AIDS. Our given and chosen family bridges almost every facet of difference I can imagine. It's hard for any parent to let go of that framed picture that grows in the mind's eye of what their child's life will look like. It was particularly hard for my parents to grasp that their experience of the world does not translate to the lives of their children. That in order to understand our lives and be in real relationship with us, they had to let go of all the things life had taught them about who and what is most valuable, what success looks like, what the best for their children is, and get curious about what our worlds look like, what our needs are, what brings us life. At a certain point, I had to sit my parents down and say, look, I want a real relationship with you, and I know you want a real relationship with me. And in order for that to happen, I need you to stop making assumptions and start asking questions. I said to them, this is way bigger than respecting my name and my pronouns. Calling me by the name and pronouns that feel best to me is a bare minimum of us staying in each other's lives. Because if you're not willing to do what's necessary in order for me to stay present and not dissociate when I'm around you, there's nowhere we can go from there. But if we're going to be more than people who are simply able to share space, I need you to do more than merely respect the language I use for myself. I need you to be curious about why I use that language. I need you to be curious about my life and how it's different from yours and what a difference those differences make. I need you to respect my truths. If you can't do this, we can still talk and see each other, but we're going to be people who talk about the weather. Because we are so different, real relationship takes more than just being friendly to each other. It takes actively engaging with our differences and doing the hard work of unlearning our assumptions. My parents never really thought about what would happen after their children grew up. They didn't have great relationships with their own parents, so they didn't have good models for what it would be like to have good relationships with their adult children themselves. I think Unitarian Universalism is the same way. I don't think Unitarian Universalism has ever truly thought about what would happen after its children grew up. If the quintessential UU, like my parents, came here from somewhere else, they might not have good models for how to be a religion whose children don't leave. Did you hear that? I'll say it again. If most UUs come here from somewhere else, they might not know how to create churches whose children don't leave. Beyond that, they might not know how to create a religious community where people who are different from them don't leave. It's not that our churches aren't welcoming. Of course they are. As a young, queer, trans, raised UU, I absolutely feel like I can visit any UU church in person or online and be greeted with a warm smile. I know I won't be told that I'm going to hell or be expected to believe something I don't believe. And I'm reasonably sure that no one will be actively awful to me because of who I am or how they perceive me. There's no understating how important this is. It's deeply meaningful. I can't tell you what it means as a queer and trans person to have been raised in a faith tradition where people like me weren't condemned. But the promise of not being told I'm going to hell isn't enough to make me want to come to church every week, y'all. It takes a little bit more than basic human decency for me to want to show up for my spiritual needs to get met. The only time I ever felt real, radical welcome, unconditional affirmation, and deep spiritual connection in UU spaces was when I was a teenager. Things were hard as a teen. I didn't have language yet to describe who I was to myself or to anyone else. I struggled with depression and anxiety. UU youth space was my saving grace. We didn't always get it right. But in those spaces, I truly felt the saving power of this faith. There were three things that were constants when we worshiped. We co-created it, we worshiped in the round, and oral tradition songs provided the bedrock. When we got together, someone would say, "Who wants to plan worship?" And a bunch of people would go off and make a plan together. We always worshiped in a circle, with a chalice at the center, and we usually sat on the ground and got close or held hands. We sang. We never once used a hymnal or a piano. No shade, Mel, no shade. We sang rounds and counterpoints and made up harmonies, and no one ever knew when the song would end. It just ended when it was done. Can you imagine it? Can you imagine worshiping that way? How embodied it was. It wasn't about thinking. It was about feeling and being together. Can you imagine what it was like for me to supposedly grow up and be expected to worship with the adults, with their rows of chairs and their hierarchical leadership and their hymnals and their orders of service? I'll never forget being 17 years old when the youth group was invited to do a youth-led service. And some of you know this story because I told it in the course that some of you have taken. All we wanted to do was put the chairs in a circle because that was how we worshiped. But someone said no. not because there were box pews or the chairs were nailed to the floor, because there was an unwillingness to embrace change, even for one single Sunday. There was an unwillingness to do something different, something possibly uncomfortable in service of us. A few years back, I heard UU Minister Reverend Rob Hardies preach on the topic, willing to be changed by what we've started, a line from one of our hymns. And I was instantly transported back to being 17 and feeling that sense of rejection over the damn chairs. I thought to myself, what if the youth knew more deeply what it meant to be UU and practice Unitarian Universalism than the adults who found this faith later in life? What if those of us who were raised here understood something deeper about this religion and were just waiting for the chance to share and take us all to the next level? We have to be willing, not just to welcome change, but to be changed, to transform. I'm not 17 anymore, and there are a lot more reasons than chairs in rows now that keep me from finding a congregational home. Being young and queer and trans and raised UU doesn't just mean I have particular needs around gender and sexuality and age. It means my cultural context is different from the culture of the average UU church. Being queer and trans affects everything for me. My understanding of family, my relationship to social justice, the ways I build community, my spiritual needs, my spiritual gifts. I can't truly feel at home without having these truths affirmed. In order to stay in real relationship with their children, my parents had to let go of what was comfortable and familiar for them. They had to admit that they didn't have a map for where they were going, that they didn't know the path, and that that was okay. They had to recognize that the things that had worked for them in their lives didn't work for their children. They had to get curious about the difference that our differences make. And they had to be willing to try new things, take risks, and get really uncomfortable in service of being in real relationship. They had to be changed. This is what radical welcome requires of us. It requires us to change and to be changed in the process. Radical transformational welcome is a process of redefining who we mean when we say we. When we think about who we, UUs, are, who do we mean? Is our understanding of us limited to my parents and people just like them? Or does it include me and my sister and our chosen families? When we celebrate LGBTQ pride, are we celebrating them and marching in solidarity with those people? Or are we celebrating us and marching shoulder to shoulder because we are gay and lesbian and bi and queer and trans and straight and cisgender and every sexuality and gender under the sun? When we mourn and rage and protest the murders of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and Tony McDade and David McAtee and so many others at the hands of the police, and we proclaim that Black Lives Matter, do we think of Black folks as them? Or are we working to eradicate white supremacy culture because we are Black and brown and Indigenous and Asian and multiracial and white and every racial and ethnic background under the sun? Unitarian Universalism calls us to redefine our definition of we. It calls us not to invite more people into the circle, but to draw a circle so wide that everyone is inside it. It calls us not to tolerate or accept people who are different from us, but to celebrate and love people who are different from us and allow this love to transform our understanding of the world. It calls us not to work on LGBTQ equality or anti-racism as issues, but to fight for liberation for Black people and queer and trans people, because we have been transformed by our love for our Black trans siblings. That sounds great, right? It's easy to say, yes, I want everyone to be part of the circle. Yes, I want to celebrate and love people who are different from me. Yes, I want to be a religion where people like Alex don't leave. But it turns out that it's really, really hard to actually do this. Remember how my parents expected my life to look like theirs? How they wanted what was best for me based on what their lives had taught them about what the best was? They expected me to want what was inside the circle they had drawn. NPR, a PhD, upward mobility. The church I grew up in drew the same circle. Classical music, chairs and rows, orders of service, privileging the head over the heart. I can't be part of that circle. That's not my Unitarian Universalism. My faith is a queer and trans UUism full of Black fierceness and disabled wisdom and multi-generational solidarity. A Pentecostal UUism of praise music and soul food. Worship services that break me open and bring me to tears. A community that can hold my grief and my fear and my pain. That together can love the hell out of the world. Particularly in this moment, I really need a spiritual home where I can hit my knees, open my broken heart, and be held and healed so I can go back out into the world and keep fighting. This Unitarian Universalism of mine, the faith I was raised to believe in and practice, doesn't entirely exist yet. But it's coming. It's being born out of the hearts and souls and lived ancestry of generations of queer and trans and Black and brown and disabled and poor UUs. What I need you to understand is that drawing a circle that's big enough for my parents' Unitarian Universalism and my Unitarian Universalism is possible. I need you to understand that this isn't about hating on NPR or classical music. It's about adding new radio bands and new rhythms. It's about creating a mosaic. You know how a mosaic is made, right? From broken pieces. The invitation isn't to throw away my parents' Unitarian Universalism. The invitation is to transform it, to be changed by encounters with different flavors of Unitarian Universalism. You want to know the good news? The good news is you're already doing it. You're already doing transformation and culture shift. Because here you are, online. 5 months ago, would you have willingly traded all of the in-person goings-on of this congregation to do things online instead? All of a sudden, it became painfully clear that change was necessary. If you had kept meeting in person, lives would have been at risk. Because of your definition of we, you said, no, we can't meet in person because we are elders and people of all other ages. We are people with compromised immune systems and people with all kinds of other bodies and abilities. If even one of us is at risk, all of us are responsible for keeping that person safe. The challenge of this moment is that if we embrace the transformational power of this space, we'll never go back to the way things were before. Because the way things were before didn't work for everyone. It didn't work for me. Disability justice activist Mia Minga says, if we get this right, we'll never go back to normal. If we get this right, this pandemic response, this response to anti-Black violence, this response to fascism and white supremacy culture, will start to get curious about how to do things differently in ways that draw the widest possible circle. How to do church differently. How to do community differently. How to do welcome differently. Not because it's easy or comfortable or fun, but because it's necessary. Because our faith calls us to. The beauty and the pain of parenting is that you pour everything you have, everything you know, your lifeblood, your soul, into this small, growing being. You're willing to do anything for them, whatever it takes, and you have no idea where this being will end up, what they will do, who they will be, but you give of yourself anyway. You sacrifice for them anyway. My parents and I have embraced the challenge of being in real relationship. It has not been easy. There is nothing comfortable about it. We've had to get really real and vulnerable with each other and understand each other's struggles, but it's worth it. And we are being changed. You see, when you're in relationship across lines of difference, it expands your world. My challenge to you is to not lose the transformational power of this moment. Allow yourself to grieve the things you miss about in-person worship, but also allow yourself to be curious and talk about the things you've gained by doing things differently. Seek out those on the edges of this community and talk about what they're hoping for and longing for. If this pandemic was over tomorrow and you had the chance to rebuild your congregation from scratch, what would you build? How could you draw the circle wider and be transformed by relationships across lines of difference? In my home church 18 years ago, being transformed would have meant not just putting the chairs in a circle for one service, but putting the chairs in a circle regularly. It would have meant not just inviting the youth to lead service once a year, but inviting youth to serve on the worship committee and transforming the entire practice of worship, learning how those who have been raised UU worship and recognizing that as a deep and true expression of Unitarian Universalism. This sort of transformation is a tall order. It's not easy. It's not comfortable. And in order to heal our world, it's necessary. I firmly believe that this is the place where we can practice this. Because radical welcome is a spiritual practice. Practice means making mistakes. Practice means getting messy and being vulnerable. Practice means taking risks and trying new, uncomfortable things and getting them wrong and trying again and again, because our world needs us to, because we need each other too. We are called as Unitarian Universalists to be more than simply friendly or good people. We are called to practice radical welcome and to take that practice out into the world. So thank you for joining me in this practice, because it is truly one of the most holy, life-changing, and world-changing things that we can do together. Amen. Ashe, aho, and blessed be.
Please join me in meditation and prayer.